and welcome to Three Worlds Podcast number 6. This one's going to come out fairly quickly on the heels of number 5. What I'm doing on this one is back in 1988, Sunbear came to Gloucester, a little town not that far away from where I was living in England at the time, and he gave a talk. And this is a recording of the first part of that talk. It was recorded in May in 1988, so it's 18 years old, thereabouts, 18 and a bit. Sound quality isn't amazing. I'm hoping that everybody will be able to hear it all right. It was recorded on just a little cassette dictation machine, so please forgive the kind of crudeness of it. But I've given it a listen to, and I think I can pretty much hear it, so I'm hoping that other people will as well. So I hope you enjoy this, and I've got a load more sort of talks and things from different people, so I'll slip those into other pods at different times. To remind you again of the contact details, you can email me nick@sacredhoop.org. You can visit the website for the podcast, threeworlds.co.uk. You can visit the Sacred Hoop website, www.sacredhoop.org, and you can visit my own website, which is nicholaswood.net. I hope you can understand this talk okay, and the clarity of his voice is good enough to listen to, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, well, here we go. Sunbear in Gloucester in 1988.
Well, it's very good to be here. It was very beautiful to ride out, and I saw that there's still some greenness left in the land. It's very encouraging. You know, you begin to wonder sometimes when you begin to see what's happening on the earth that maybe we're down to where there's one lone tree left and it's put around it like in a zoo, you know, and announce it for future generations that this is a tree. I always am fearful of that. We might have gotten to that stage somewhere in the world. And so to drive out here and see that there were green things growing and everything, and coming out and also seeing that there were some birds flying around and everything, and I just said, thank you, Great Spirit, as we went along the path, because there's still hope for us. You know, we still have just maybe just a little bit of possibilities yet. And it's something to be very aware of, though, because some places it's not quite like that anymore. There's places in the United States where there are places that have big signs up, and the sign says, "Do not enter, do not leave your car under any circumstances. This area is contaminated with dioxin." And that's along a highway, a major freeway outside of St. Louis. And there once was a city there, 15,000 people, and they had to evacuate the whole city. And for the next 25 or 50 or 100 years, it's no longer a place where people can live or be. And there are many places like that happening elsewhere. They say there's a 100-mile-wide belt in the Soviet Union and other places that's expanding every year, where the grass has turned yellow and nothing will grow on the land anymore. The land has been killed by chemicals. And you look at people who come to me from Czechoslovakia and they show me pictures from their country, and it looks like twice or maybe 20 times as bad as Los Angeles on a smoggy day. So you know that there are places in the world where the contamination is becoming very acute. We were watching the news this morning, and the United States was looking for a place to dump garbage. They were even checking out England if they would be interested in having it dumped over here. So, and that's for real. That was on the news. You know, you probably read about the garbage boat that went all the way around the world trying to find a place that they wanted their garbage. Well, that's becoming a growing problem there. And it's really something that people just never bothered to take a look at. It's something of the way that we have dealt with the world for a long time. We produce things that are not necessarily good for anything. After we've used up what we have from them, then the rest is a throwaway. And the throwaways, many of them are such that people are not ready or willing to recycle them or take responsibility for them. And this is becoming a continuing sad thing. I remember 12 years back when I was in a park, a national park in the United States, and I heard this noise and I looked around and everything, and I saw a poor skunk and he had his head stuck in a tin can. He'd stuck his head in there to eat out of this can, and we caught him around the head, and he was locked in there, and freeing and doing mercy. Efforts for skunks isn't my idea, totally. But I decided that he needed my help, so I waited until I could get reach from behind a tree, and then I grabbed the can and do a quick jerk, and it came off, and he jerked out the other way, and he was so happy to be free that he didn't stop even to announce his presence to me. So it was okay. But it is something that you notice and you see these things happening in so many places. It's not, it's not just the humans. Sometimes I look at it, and when out on the east coast of the United States, where they dump out, thousands and thousands of tons of garbage into the ocean, they go out beyond a shelf there that you regard as being a shelf in the ocean, and they dump these big garbage chips. They just dump it in the ocean. They've been doing it for years. And then one time there, they got to where the winds blew in from the ocean for 2 months. The winds were blowing in from the ocean, and all this garbage was up on the New Jersey shore. It all come back to it. And every so often that happens, And it's sort of a thing of, you look and you say, It's like the Earth Mother sometimes is just vomiting up all the things that we put into it. And it's a powerful thing, because something is really happening, and we're going to have to look at that more closely, because the biggest problem of the world has been that we never looked at and results of anything we did. This has been true all over, and particularly the industrialized nations have to really take a look at that today, because what we've done and the end result is not pretty. And it's to now to where it's beginning to get to where it's coming back on us in a very strong way. Over in Deutschland, where I come from, we went through different parks over there, and they showed us, they had signs on different trees to show the stages of the dying of tea trees and why they were dying, the pollution was causing it and everything. Acid rains and everything. In the United States, east coast of the United States and Pennsylvania, one particular species, birch trees. In the last 3 years, all the birch trees died out. And they died out because they were the least resistant to certain pollutions that were coming into the land here. And there's an old friend of mine. He's a Hindu. He's a Hindu monk named Basant. Some of you may know him. That's why I mention him. He goes around the world doing fire ceremonies to try to teach people how to take a better balance in their life. And he gave me a gift of one of these pyramids that he uses for doing his ceremonies, and shared with me because of that I'm I'm traveling and I'm talking to so many different people and everything. And he said, tell them, he said, the things that I say also, he said. Because they have a prophecy among their people. And when the trees die, then the people start dying too. Because the trees filter all of the poisons out of the air. And it's something to look at, just what is happening with trees now, what is happening with them. Like many of you are aware of what's happening in Brazil, where a whole rainforest is being destroyed. It's being cut down like thousands and thousands of acres of it. Now they're cutting it down also because gold miners want to come in there and do a little bit of mining and other things. And they're just tearing down like 5,000 acres a day. Rainforest is being destroyed. They say that 40% of the oxygen in the world is reduced there. And the research of scientists find that it takes one tree, big tree produces enough oxygen to provide for the needs of 12 people. And when that tree is cut down, it takes 2,500 little trees to replace it. That's something to think about. Look at what's happening. And it's something of it that is coming home to us because the population in the world is getting sicker all the time. We have more illnesses coming on. In the United States, 1 out of 3 people will have cancer in their lifetime. And that's in spite of all of the modern medicine and everything else that's coming up. And the other sicknesses that are happening, they're all being caused by humanity not being responsible to nature. The creation around us, it is not a one-way street. It's not a thing that we can take from. Give back sometimes. And that's something that you're feeling more and becoming more aware of all the time. And I started out on this path. My uncles, the old medicine people up in the north, they come to me one time and we sat down and lodged together and we prayed. And they were praying with tears in their eyes. They were really praying. This old man, he said, you have to do something. He said, you have to talk to these people. They said, because they said, what is happening? They said, but we went to fish before. We got fish for to feed ourselves and our families. They said, the fish are dead and the fish are so sick that we can't eat them anymore. Mercury poisoning and all the other sicknesses, the pollutants that are put in the rivers to where the fish are not edible anymore. That's what's happening. And it's happening up in, like up in Canada, there's places in Canada where the other wildlife also is dying or has sicknesses because of it. And deer that are born and are deformed and everything. And it's all because of the things that we're doing to nature and creation around us. And it's something of it that it seems like the industrialized man, he looks at it, and first he pollutes the cities. Then he goes out and he says, well, there's hardly any people living here at all, so it's okay, we'll dig up this uranium, or we'll dig up this, and we can just take it, and we can just put the pollution right into the air because there's not too many people here. Just a few Indians around here, you know, so we really don't need to worry about it. They aren't any heavy political pressure, so we'll just do it. And this has been going on for many years now. My daughter, some of you may have heard of her, the Indians call her Winona Vanduk, the Duke. She's a very outspoken speaker on anti-nuclear things and on women's issues. And she did a considerable amount of research as to what was happening on the Indian reservations in the Southwest, where they have had some 300 miners die. Indian miners have worked in mines of leukemia for mining uranium. And it's something that we don't look at these things, if we don't look at the end result, the native people, whenever we add anything into our life path, we make a measurement. We say, well, how does this affect our relationship to the Earth Mother? How does it affect our relationship to the Creator? How does it affect our relationship to each other? And how does it affect the lives of all generations to come? That's the way we look at it. And it's something of it that I shared with you these things because ecology and a sense of responsibility for the Earth, that was what the beginning free meant, mankind was. The keepers and protectors of the Earth Mother, and take responsibility and understand it. And they got away from it. They lost it somewhere. They lost the sense of identity with these things. And it's a thing of it that, to me, ecology can't be a political word anymore. Just it has to be something deeper than that. It has to be something of a spiritual thing. That's what it was and always has been for Native people. It's something of the way that we live, when we deal with nature and creation around us. Before we go out on the hunt, we make a prayer, we do a ceremony. And when we're doing that prayer and that ceremony, we're praying about to the animal that we're going to hunt, whether it's a buffalo or the deer or what. And the prayer is, we take your life in order to continue our own at this time, little brother. And even as we take your life at this time, the time will come when we'll give up our life and our body will go back to the Earth Mother, and from it we'll feed and bring forth new life. And it's something of it that when we go out to harvest herbs or plants or even from our garden, we have tobacco with us. And before we harvest a plant, we make an offering. And like when we're harvesting herbs for, like we need them for ceremony, like sage and things like that, we don't take from the first one we come to, but we thank the Creator that exists. And then we make an offering, and then we go and we harvest from the next one. And that the species might continue, that life might continue. It's always a remembrance. And it's a very important part of it. You don't clear cut anything. It's something that long time back, when the first Europeans come to the North American continent, and they saw a beautiful, unspoiled wilderness from sea to shining sea, a land that was not contaminated in any way. And they come there and they saw the natives, like in Massachusetts and Virginia, beginning places at the beginning of the settlements there. And the native people were planting their corn. And when they planted their corn, they would take and put a fish or part of a fish into the ground with the corn. And the people, they looked at them and they said, well, this must be some savage superstition. They said, hey, look at here, you know, this land is powerful and it has to, whatever he's doing, this is some savage ritual that this poor Indian is doing. And the Indians, the native people, said, you have to feed the ground. You can't take from it all the time, you have to give. And the people that come, when they come across the water and they went into it, they used up three farms in their lifetime. Plant the crops, use the farm, burn off the timber, just like they do in, it was slash and burn throughout across the whole United States. And they would burn the timber off, and then they would use the farm for 20 years, 15 years, it would be all worn out in the soil, and then they move on further westward. Up in the eastern part of the United States, you see old stone fences up there, where now there's trees growing up again because the land was so completely wore out, they couldn't farm it anymore. Out on the west coast of the United States, they used to take in four holes in the bottom of these beautiful fir trees and pine trees, and then when the sap would come down into the tree, its trunk would come in and form into this pitch, the tree pitch, you know. They'd set fire to it, make a torch out of a whole 75-foot tall tree to burn it down so they could get the land to raise crops on. And that was the way that it went. And this is why the native people had such an anger and such a frustration to see what was happening. And why they fought back like they did. It cost the U.S. government 8 federal soldiers for every Indian they caught killed across the United States. And that was their policy up until 1900. The only good Indian was a dead Indian as far as they were concerned. Same policy that is now in Brazil and in other parts of the world. It's a sad thing because the people who were trying to protect the land, they were the ones that were killed off for trying to do it. And now we look. Here and there, a few people can need to wake up and say thank you, Great Spirit, for that. It's a sad thing because I have messengers come to me, very strong messengers sometimes. I'm going to share with you a little story about this because I want you to think about it. I had, used to be that I would go into Spokane, a town that's 35 miles from us, and there, whenever I get in there, I would go to a bookstore where I'd given some lectures, and I'd use the phone there because otherwise if I called from out where we lived around the city, it was all long distance calls. So once I got into Spokane, I used my friend's phone in the bookstore and called. And I come in there, and I hadn't been in there for 3 months' time. And I made 3 phone calls on the phone, picked up the phone call on the phone to make another call. And a voice, there was no ring, I picked it up, there was no ring, and a voice on the other end of the phone said, "Sun Bear," and I said, "Yes." He said, "An eagle fell from the sky, and he's hurt, and I want to bring him to you." And I said, "Well, you know where I'm at, bring him to me." And this man come by, he'd been to one of my lectures some time back, and he just felt to call me, and just at that exact minute there. And he brought me this beautiful bird that was alive still. I looked at its tail feathers and I saw it wasn't an eagle but a red hawk. And I kept it with me in the car for that during that day while I was doing the rest of my shopping. I tried to feed it meat, but didn't want any meat. I offered it water, took a little bit of water. And at the end of the day, I had a sweater wrapped around it to keep it warm because it seemed like it was chilled. At the end of the day, it signaled that it wanted me to take that sweater off of its body. And I pulled it away, and it fluttered twice in the car and died. And it told me something. It told me a message. The bird looked like it was not normal anymore. It told me it was dying because it had been poisoned. Poisoned by its pesticides. And that was what had happened to it. It flew and all of a sudden it just dropped down, paralyzed. And it's something that's happening. It's happening all over the world. And there's areas like in Thailand there to where that there are no longer any fish, freshwater fish inside of the whole country that are edible, because they've all been killed off by pollution. They have no restraint on people there at all. They can just go and dump it in there and destroy things. It's something, because we have to look at the belief system that's created the way that we look at, we deal with the world and we deal with each other as human beings. People ask me sometimes, they say, "What do you fear most in the world, son?" Thank you. I say, not the atomic bombs, I say. I don't fear the atomic bombs, I say. What I fear more than anything else is human condition. The belief system that has been put onto us to where we've been conditioned to believe and think a certain way. And it's been a lot of people that have been doing a number on their heads for a long time. A belief system that causes us and allows us to destroy ecology. It's a belief system that is put into our minds that the only that we're all going to go to heaven, so we don't need to worry about taking responsibility for the earth. This man that was in Ronald Reagan's assistant, Secretary of Interior, some time back, he made a statement one time. He said, "Well," he said, "don't worry about the environment." He said, "We shouldn't worry about it." "We'll use up all the resources," because he said, "we're going to go to heaven." He said, "Only the bad people will be left here anyhow." And that was his attitude about it. And it's a thing of it that like one old Indian once said, he said, "If the white man wants to go to heaven so badly, why don't he go?" For us Indians. And I don't think the Creator, the Great Spirit of God, had that intention. I think it, you know, like the Native people feel that the earth is a beautiful place that was created for us to be here, to live, and to grow, and to balance and harmony. But we've allowed ourselves to build into our conditioning the fact that this is not our home, and we're not really responsible here. We can do whatever we want, and then we just disappear. We've been doing that all over the earth, you know, we wear it out. Go in and okay, we're going to mine out all these resources here, and then when the last bit of resources is gone, it's goodbye, folks. We left and we're going back to wherever it is. And that's been going on for a long time. People haven't taken responsibility. They don't acknowledge the planet as a whole planet or take responsibility in that manner. Native people speak of the earth as our mother. And when they use that term, they're speaking of not only the mother of human beings, but of all living creation. Whenever we go into the sweat lodge, we make a prayer for all of our relation. And it's like plants, animals, insects, crawlers, everybody. You know, all of them have the same right to life on the planet as we do. Some people are aware of that. That's good. You know, I was felt very good today. I turned on the television and I saw the Duke of Edinburgh come on there. And he was speaking out, you know. It could have been me saying the words, you know. I said, "Thank you, Great Spirit." You know, there's a man that can command a certain amount of respect, you know. He was actually saying some really strong things about it. I'm taking responsibility. And it's something of it that it's something that, you know, when you can look at the beauty of living creation around you and say, "Thank you, Great Spirit, it's so alive." That's good. You know? The whole thing of life. Life is a gift in all parts of creation. Native people feel that the first step of a person's healing, when we work with healing somebody, the most important steps of their healing is when they are able to reach out and give to something to somebody else. Some of the first beginnings that they're able to do, people that need to do that, is learning how to give to nature, the creation around them. Understand that that's a living part of life there. Up where I live in Spokane, Washington, because people have depleted the environment around there very much, and much of it is no longer, there's anything there for the deer to eat in the winter time. So I take them to feeding the deer every winter. I feed them and make sure they survive when the snow gets deep and everything, because I like to see them there. just like to see them there. They're beautiful. And it's a thing that with Native people, we've always had that sense of oneness with all creation. We think of everything as being part of a circle on the earth. And all of us are children of the same mother, the Earth Mother, which is the Creator made this earth for us to live on, to be here and to share and to keep our, and we have a right to take for our needs, but we have to destroy or deplete. And that's the way we feel, like when people come to us, we're always, you know, hey, we're generous and open handed here. Come on, so you want to have a cup of coffee, have something to eat, you know. I'm going to Native families that have very little, and yet they're always generous. Hospitality is sacred to their people. Always has been. And we think about, we look around and we see, you know, like I see the needs of humanity. I know people need a place to sleep, they need to eat something to eat and everything. But it's the imbalances of the waste of things that we create and everything. And I see it in many different places. And it's a sadness of that. And we have to come to a balance. We have to be to where if we take something away, we have to give something back. This year, I started a project again on my own with my own group, where we are starting trees, little Christmas trees, and little pots, so that instead of this winter, when it comes toward Christmas time, instead of people going down and getting one at a Christmas a tree lot where it's been cut off and it's sitting there, you know, we want to sell them a tree that has life in it, and they can take it home, and we're going to have them adopt a tree, you know. Maybe they can have it for 2-3 years even, before they plant it out in their backyard or something. And teaching people to add to nature rather than to take away from them. And that's what I try to do. Some of my tribesmen, they don't understand my approach because I come out and I talk to non-native people and I treat them like human beings, you know. And some of them are angry enough that they don't feel that that's any more part of what should be done, you know. But I feel that if I can reach out and communicate to people, make them think, make them aware, and that's thank you, Great Spirit. That's what it's about. And it's something of it that the sickness that comes upon us, all of the sicknesses that we have are interrelated. In my work, one of the first things that I deal with the sicknesses that start up in the head. I work a lot with healing. We're in the process of setting up. We have 3 healing centers in Deutschland, Germany. We're trying to get one going down in Mexico. And we're working on, we have some in the United States. And these are people that have studied with apprentices, they're doctors, or psychiatrists, or chiropractors, or people in many fields of life. And we work with people there, or start to work with them in healing people. And one of the things that I tell people is that 90% of the illnesses of humanity start out in the head. They start out with the anger, the fear, the jealousy, frustration. They start out up here, then they go down into your body. They go down into, like, the first one place they attacked is right in the back of the neck. Right down in here. Many of you felt it there, right? You go on, you're on a job, you know. And some guy, he's got promoted when he should have gotten a job, you know. Or maybe it's somebody that whistles out of tune on the job, you know. And this guy, eventually he becomes a pain in the neck to you, literally. That's what it becomes. You get a pain in it, and you feel the anger charging. Then it goes into your body in other places. If it goes down in here, maybe it's that guy looked at my girlfriend too long. Looked at my girl looked at my boyfriend too long, you know, or something like that there. And it goes down and it gets down in the chest here first, you know. It's that anger thing, and hey, it's up here. And it gets down in here, you're feeling uptight. Pretty soon you can't even eat, you're so uptight, and the next thing it goes down into your stomach, and that's where it goes. Or if it gets into another place that it goes right down into your side here, this part of your body here. And it forms what we call energy blocks. Energy blocks, that's where it blocks energy from flowing through your body anymore. And that becomes a real sickness. That becomes a real sickness, that's cancer. Or you can look at people, I look at people coming to me, people come to me for consultations, for healings, and I look at them. And what I see is I can look at them and I can tell where they're going, what's going to be their sickness. They really come along and they're very, they feel rigid, you know, stiff. There's arthritis and rheumatism coming. And you look at the ones that have ones that have a lot of anger in them. They just blow off immediately. That's heart attacks coming. You can look at them. And now, medical science is catching up with you. The United States are starting to look at young people and are being able to understand what kind of sicknesses they're getting. They're looking at it and they say that, you know, the school bully don't live long. Find out that he gets problems. If he don't get into the balance in there, or otherwise somebody shoots him or knocks the block off either way, you know, he ends up in prison. But they're able to trace people. They can tell, hey, what this guy was back there when he was little. And patterns that people they dig into and they hold on to it. That's what happens. Something that the sickness is like the native people, we talk about the different sicknesses that come to humanity, and we go into the sweat lodge to heal people and work with them and pray with them in there. Sweat lodge is a very powerful thing. It's where we put rocks, hot rocks that we've heated outside, and we put them in a pit inside a pit, and we have inside, and we have the lodge covered over completely. We go in there and we sit down on the earth and we just tell people that we're going into the womb of the mother, be reborn and cleansed again. We go in there, we pour water on these hot rocks, and steam comes up from the rocks, and that's a breath of life, and it goes into our bodies, and pretty soon all of the sickness starts pouring out of our bodies. And that's the way we heal. And the deep sicknesses that we try to heal in the sweat lodge are anger, fear, jealousy. Those are the big ones. Those are the ones that really, really eat into you and can cause the sicknesses, the deep sicknesses of arthritis, rheumatism, all of them. You can trace all of them to that. And it's very, like, in the United States now, they're beginning to find the mental, emotional problems. They're finding the causes of how they start up and everything. And before cancer, when somebody develops cancer, the first thing the doctors that are really, really up on their medical practice, they say, well, did you have an emotional crisis at the time that this was coming on? Did you feel something? Were you having some problem in your relationship or in your business or something? And that's what they started tracing it and finding out that that's it. And before you can heal that person, that's what you really have to get back. And they don't know quite how to do that yet. But they, you know, at least they're beginning to find out where the culprits are. And that's encouraging, because it's something I would like, you know, I work with MDs from time to time. In fact, a lot of MDs send me their mothers and their wives and so forth, because, you know, they say, well, you know, going over there and see, maybe he can do something. Yeah, I can. And I get them. Come to me for treatment, for healing and help, other medicine people also. And it's something that sometimes I go in, like I go in for a checkup every year just to make sure that everything is still in place where it's supposed to be and happening and everything. And I get a get kicked out of these guys, you know, because they're sitting there and they're still playing with the same old tools sometimes. And I ask him, I say, well, what do I have to do? And he says, well, you go over there and take the bottle in and pee in the bottle, he says, and then I'm going to take some blood out and everything. I say, gee, I say, you guys are really primitive, I said. He says, I got people, you know, that can take and they look into my eyes and they can tell by looking in my eye where my sicknesses are, you know, where they put my arm up and they'll see if it's going to do me good or not. I said, these guys, they got down pretty good. Amazing thing is these things work. They work. And so we discuss it anyhow. But I did a program in Los Angeles with 45 psychiatrists. And these people come to me and we did weekend programming. And I went through everything that I did and so forth. And they're busy taking notes and everything. And then the next week I had 4 days free before I went on my next program. And they knew what I was going to be around Los Angeles for 4 days. So they said, Sundberg, do you have any free time? Would you be open to doing some consultations? And I said, sure, why not? You know, that's something that I do sometimes. And I limit my consultations to half an hour with anyone. Because I tell them, I say, you know, by that time, either I'm bored with your story or I haven't figured out something to do with you. And I say, that's all the time I want to spend on anybody. And so that's the way I work with them. And they come, they filled up my 4 days between them and their pet patients. And all of them, they had problems. Every psychiatrist that ever has come to me has had problems. They all need help. And the thing is that, you know, some of them come to me with tears in their eyes. They say, well, what can I do? What can I really do for this person? You know, they say, I can put a band-aid on them, an emotional band-aid. I send them back in the same job, the same situation made them crazy in the first place. That's the thing of it. A lot of it is that you're taking people that are basically, you know, good human beings, sensitive human beings, and you're trying to force them to fit in and conform to a particular situation just because that's the way society is and that's the way you got to do it. So that's what happens. Pretty soon they blow their sprockets out again and they go end up in the funny farm and locked away because that's the only ultimate thing you can do in this society. And it's sad. Well, Native people, we had ways of working with these things too. Like sometimes it's interesting because people come to me and there's a lot of people come to me as a last resort. They have, the doctor says, you got 2 weeks to live, you know. And they say, well, I tried everything else. I think I'll try this Indian medicine man character now because, you know, it's all shot anyhow. Once in a while I get lucky, you know. Sometimes I get lucky and I'm able to do something. I keep praying. I say, well, Creator, can't you send them to me? Will they still have both arms and legs on them? You know, you got some possibility. Getting where I get more response now. It's getting a little bit more where I'm getting them a little earlier. Sometimes the Creator thinks it's been good to me and sending me a little more help. But we have a thing of it that we believe in working with and healing the whole human being. That's what we work with. The first thing I start out with is a head. I don't start out with a sore toe. I start out with the head first. And what I do is I talk to the person and find out what their problem is. The Native people have been doing this for... I go around and I'm visiting with some other medicine man or medicine woman. And I'm down there with the Mayans down in South America, down in Tikal. That's a place in South America where they have some powerful temples. And talking to this Mayan medicine man. I say, well, how do you do it? What do you do with your people? He said, we have them stand over a stream of flowing water. And they speak out over this stream of water all the things that they feel badly about that are bothering them in their life. And this water carries it away from them, takes it away from them. And in Mexico, they build a statue build a papier-mâché statue. And they have the statue prior to the big fiesta celebration. They have people come up and people put little notes on the statue. That's the end of Dr. Bloom. Now amongst the people in the southwest, there's a tribe of Indians there. And the way that they look after their emotional problems and mental problems is that they have a group of dancers, and they call them devil dancers because they're driving out the devils or the bad spirits. They call them the spirit dancers, mountain spirit dancers, and crown dancers because they wear a big high crown. If you go down there, Apache reservations, you see here, if you get a chance reading a book, you see sometimes in some of the old books you see pictures of them. And they dance through the village with swords, and they drive out any of the bad spirits that are there, and they get rid of them that way. And then afterwards, the man comes through and sweeps behind them with brooms made out of cedar boughs to drive out anything, get rid of anything negative that's left behind. And that's the way they cleanse out their area before. And then after that, they have a corn maiden, they call her, comes and sprinkles cornmeal. It's a blessing. It's a blessing. Now, amongst my tribe, the Ojibwe people, or Chippewa, and some of the Blackfeet people, and also amongst my own group, the Bear Tribe, we do it, with all my people I work with, we have a very strong way of getting rid of negativity. And what we do is we have our people in the spring of the year, this is a good time of the year to do it, and they go out on the land and they find a place where they can do it. They dig a hole in the ground. They get down on their hands and knees. And they speak into that hole all the things that they feel badly about, the things that are bothering them, the things that they've been holding back. Sometimes people dam up their emotions. They have the gunny sack, their emotions, they hold them back and everything. And so they get out there and they just talk it all into that hole in the ground. And after that, they cover it over, and they pray that it be transformed into what it is, fertilizer for the Earth Mother. You leave it there. Very important that you leave it there. And pray over it so that you've completed it, because it is your stuff. You know, it's your stuff you're getting rid of, and it's your responsibility to keep it, to keep yourself. And when you emptied everything out, then you have space up here in your head for the Creator to put some new knowledge in there. Then you can start taking some new good things. But you have to get rid of it first. It's a real thing of emptying out and freeing yourself. And then you're ready for other kinds of healing. You can start healing because you've opened up and freed yourself.